Hi, the Eric half of the Petchy Brothers here, and before you listen to this episode of Story Tap, there's a couple of things to know. One, we decided to name the episode Scylla after the sea serpent-esque monster from the Odyssey. Two, this is our first time having a guest since we gave the podcast a specific structure. So, three, this episode was a mess. We talked for like 45 minutes about an idea for a ghost pirate movie before switching gears and essentially starting over. Which leads me to 4. I ain't editing this episode. It's an hour and a half long. It's 2 a.m. on a Friday. I took most of the ghost pirate stuff out because it basically went nowhere, but that's it. That's all you get. There may be discrepancies here and there, but it should be cohesive enough overall. So, knowing all of that, please enjoy Scylla. Hi, I'm Eric.
I'm Alec.
And I'm Kate.
And this is Story Tap, where the Petchy brothers
and sister
try to tap the potential of an idea by turning it into a story.
This episode,
Scylla, underwater meets Amadeus meets Dunkirk. Is it spooky episodes?
Yes.
I was going to say,
shit, I had 3 ideas and I didn't write any of them down. So now, I had them like an hour ago. The 3 ideas I had were 1, a generic scary movie.
Ooh.
For, you know, spooky season.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I remember the third one. The third one, which is now the second one because I don't remember the second one, was just a Halloween-themed kind of sequel to an already established title. And the
Ratatouille.
Ratatouille. And I can't remember the other one. I think it was... Oh, it was just a zombie movie. So either a generic scary movie, a movie about zombies, and it can be... Well, it can be spooky, or it can be fun and lighthearted. Or a Halloween sequel to a movie that already exists. What do y'all want to do?
I don't want to do a Halloween sequel to a movie that already exists. We just did Other People's IP.
That's true.
Last month, and I would prefer to just be original and spooky.
Okay. And Kate, do you care
what were the other two options?
A scary movie, or a movie about zombies, or a movie about vampires. Do y'all care?
I don't. For some reason, I don't want to do. I think I'm kind of over zombies right now.
Yeah.
So just a scary movie?
Yeah, I mean, just a scary movie, or like I could maybe do vampires, but I just don't really want to do zombies. The aesthetics are off for me.
That's fair.
The vampire aesthetic is unarguably better than the zombie aesthetic.
So the essence of a horror movie, this is what Mr. Douglas taught me back in high school, what makes something scary is the powerlessness or helplessness of the main character, which is very unique to horror, because every other genre is all about like, oh, that would be really cool, maybe projecting on the main character or projecting something of yourself. But horror is like the opposite of what people want to feel. So it does end up doing that whole catharsis thing that Angus Fletcher talks about a lot that I'm not going to get into again.
Okay. Okay. Then I've got the opposite of how Eric wants to feel. We're doing a horror movie
underwater.
The ocean.
Oh my god.
Underwater.
Holy shit, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
There's sea snake.
Giant sea serpent.
I'm giving everyone listening my greatest weakness right now. Okay, that is something that I thought would be really cool. And there was a movie that was just called, like, Underwater or something like that.
And people
said it wasn't that good. And I was like, okay, but I'm not watching that. And then I saw a YouTube video essayist guy, I think it was Filmento, made a video essay about it, and he was like, this movie's not that good. Also, it's not that scary, because not very much happens underwater. And I was like, oh, damn! So I think the market is still untapped for an underwater horror movie.
Truly, we are tapping this story.
So, to decide right off the bat, it has to be a good horror movie. If someone explains to you what the monster is, or if you see it like perfectly lit right away, it's pretty much ruined, and that should not be done. But we should decide what the monster is right away, and I'm thinking a giant sea serpent
is a snake.
Oh, fuck.
Well, okay, I don't know if it should be a snake or if we're just, like, making it a snake because that's what scares you the most about the ocean.
That's what scares me the most about the ocean.
I know. See, and so, like, I don't know if we're accidentally limiting the potential here just because it's like, Eric is afraid of water snakes.
No, we have to decide on something. So if it's limiting or not, and I doubt it is, we should decide on something. And I think a giant sea serpent is fucking terrifying.
I feel like there's something almost... I think that there's been sort of, y'all might shoot this down, you might edit it out. I think there has been sort of a movement in the last few years to like marry sci-fi and supernatural horror. And with, you know, mixed results. Some of them have been good, some of them have been whatever. But, you know, like, and the way that a lot of this gets done is it is horror in space. It is like the haunted spaceship or like demons in space, whatever, and you know, like, which sort of gets spawned with Doom in the I want to say the 80s, but honestly I don't pay close attention, but I feel like there is potential for that underwater because the deep ocean to me is profoundly haunted.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is sort of this sense of like, what if the ocean is the monster? It is the ocean claiming us, the darkness. But I guess we can have real things.
Like the ocean is the bad guy?
The ocean is the bad guy.
Like people are just drowning.
Like the opposite of Moana?
Yeah, like the opposite of Moana.
That's funny. So, like, the people there. There is no mystery. It's like, oh, they drowned.
Yeah, I think that turns into like a stranded story pretty quick instead of a horror movie.
Yeah.
Unless you take it in the direction of, I remember, Eric, you've said before that Dunkirk is actually a horror film, right? Haven't we talked about that?
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time, but the first time I saw it, I was like, I do remember everybody got the genre wrong, and I was like, that was such a good horror or, like, no, disaster movie. That's what it is. Because you never see any Germans. It's all like, oh no, the thing is coming again.
See, I definitely had a conversation with someone about it being a horror film because of that feeling of like helplessness. Like that's the whole, you're just tracking these people being attacked, being, you know, picked off one by one in the same way that a horror film happens. So I guess it's possible, but like, I don't know. It's not going to be more traditionally spooky season.
Yeah.
Happy Halloween. Yeah. As opposed to if you have like, you know, underwater monsters or demons or spirits or something like that.
Right, yeah. It works well going one direction, going from like stranded movie to horror movie. Doesn't quite work in the opposite direction of us like let's make a horror movie where it's the ocean. The only other, as an attempt to salvage this, and I feel like I'm losing a grip on it, it's like, it's pirates. It's ghost pirates.
Ghost pirates.
Do you want to do ghost pirates instead of a giant undersea serpent? I'm not so sure the ghost pirate is real.
I just came up with a better monster movie, but whatever.
Well, I mean, this one's kind of a wreck. If you want to start completely over, we can do that. It's just we would have to start over and it would be another 30 minutes. What's your idea?
I was thinking at the beginning of this about how talking about the deep sea and like blah, blah, blah. I know it can be really cheesy, but I think that sometimes, like, stuff rooted in myth can be, like, very, like, really compelling and interesting and have, like, this kind of, like, ancient thing to it. Mm-hmm. And C.S. Lewis has this short story about, it's, like, I think he wrote it before we get to the moon, but, like, space travel is very much the thing, and like people are so excited to go to space and people are trying to go to the moon, and the first like six astronauts that get to the moon, they don't come back, and It's this big risky thing, but it's like really important. You know, we're trying to get to the moon and return, and it's so risky, blah, blah. And then it turns out that Medusa is on the moon, and like every astronaut that goes has been turned to stone. And so this guy gets up there and he sees these statues, and he's like, "What is this?" And it's astronauts, and then he turns around and Medusa is there.
Okay.
And so when you were saying like the only way out is through, it made me think of, I can't remember the names, Scylla
and Charybdis.
And Charybdis of the whirlpool and the sea monster.
Cool.
And you have to go through, and you kind of have to take your shot with one of them if you get stuck. Yeah. And I think that Medusa could also, I don't know, be a part of this, because in my head I was picturing it, you know, sort of, it's a basilisk.
Fuck.
I think that could be so much scarier in, again, a deep sea underwater setting. The risk, you see the tail come by.
Yeah.
And you know it's, if you look the wrong way. But anyway, yeah. I just did a whole departure.
My dreams are gonna be so bad.
Okay, so like, what does our now entirely different salvage crew, or whatever. Don't be sorry.
Are we going to start over? I think we could start over.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's only 8 o'clock.
Oh, and also, the other thing that I think was holding me back on Pirate Greed is that I think that that's sort of, I don't know if trope is the right word exactly, but I think it's sort of like, you know, a tried and true cliche of the horror genre that it's meant to teach you a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think that I'm not saying that it can't be used well, but I just like am not usually interested in that when I actually think that has come from a tradition of trying to justify the creation of horror stories. When really the appeal for most people is being scared or seeing, you know, death and pain and all of these things enacted on screen. And then we kind of throw in a moral to, like, I don't know, to justify the creation of it. And I just, I get kind of tired of that. And I feel like it sometimes feels kind of perfunctory.
Yeah, but at the same time, I feel like if in a lot of properties that get created, it's just like, it's like, hey, this is 90 minutes of fucked up shit happening to people, and then you get to the end and you're like, okay, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying it's like that's the opposite end of it, is that if you just do horror for horror's sake, it's like, okay, well, now I've just spent a feature film amount of time watching bad things happen to people and feel terrible.
I guess I feel like I'm more interested in seeing a well-told story about feeling helpless than being scared and like exploring fear as like something compelling in and of itself than making it a message.
Yeah.
Or,
and that's why you should brush your teeth. Because if you don't, the basilisk will come from the depths and eat your flesh after it turns you to stone, so it'll eat your stone flesh.
Yeah, when I said earlier, like, they get out because they're a good person, I don't mean, like, they get out because they, you know, donated more money to charity before the movie started or anything like that. I did, to have someone survive, it has to be for a reason. So we can, if you're just exploring fear.
And again, not in like a torture porn way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I hate that. Like, I think that's dumb.
There's no value in that.
No. But like, again, if we look at Dunkirk as an example of a horror film or a disaster film, those people, you know, Harry Styles kind of sucks in that movie, and he's willing to sacrifice people to survive, And then he comes out of it and he's like really troubled by what this has revealed about himself. Yeah. Like, you know, by his experience and his cowardice, and he feels like he's being celebrated as this war hero, but he's not. And yeah. so I just think that that is just as interesting to me. And the fact that he doesn't survive for a reason, but because he didn't happen to be on that U-boat, he was on this U-boat, you know, that that is something that could be part of a good horror film that doesn't tend to be explored.
That gives me an idea.
And because for... I think normally people who are doing horror are just like in it for the graphics and not in it for any sort of storytelling or human emotion.
That does give me an idea for a pretty kick-ass...
Except Jordan Peele.
Yes. That does give me an idea for a pretty kick-ass horror film. It would... Okay, here's my pitch, basically.
Okay.
It's framed essentially like Amadeus, where someone goes in to talk to someone who's troubled, and then who they meet is our narrator for what was a horror story.
Frankenstein!
Where this person... Maybe they're even talking to a priest. It's Amadeus twice. And basically, whoever is doing the interview, the interviewer, is saying, good people, you know, get more out of life. Like, you have good intentions, you're just going to be better off. And Soliari, the interviewee, is recounting the story of the horror story that went down. And, you know, whoever is asking him these questions is saying, like, well, you got out. You like, did the struggle. You managed to... Blah, blah, blah. But the interviewee knows, like, no, I got out because I kicked that guy in the chest and ran away. I dig that a lot more.
Is there a way... I mean, I think this is maybe... Maybe if it's, like, in a... Like, I think you'd have to introduce some sort of, like, formal kind of hierarchy or structure so that you wouldn't ever use people's names. But is there a way, again, to subvert the genre to make you think that the protagonist is... Or the guy telling the story is the protagonist? Or, like, the guy who appears better than everyone else? The guy who you think is going to survive? And then really it's kind of, like, the shitty kind of guy who you feel like is going to die first? He's really the person telling the story.
Yeah, I really like that.
Okay, so we have framed it this whole time, and the shitty dude takes the other guy's dog tags or whatever and just, like, claims his life.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So it could be a claiming identity.
Oh, okay.
I was just thinking, like, it was a, you know, you didn't notice the whole time that we never actually revealed who it was.
Like... One guy on the crew goes by his last name the whole time, and you find out they have the same first name, or something like that.
Perhaps. The thing is, to get that twist, I feel like we would have to do a lot of dancing around of following of the plot, depending on who it follows, and basically that person... Whenever they narrate, well, it wouldn't have to always be narration. The only narrated parts could be when they're together, and then when they're apart, we follow the one.
And you could go back and forth. I'm not even like, I think in a traditional horror film, you are jumping perspectives a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're following this guy, and then you're following this guy, but there's an assumption that, like, this guy is gonna get killed pretty quick. You know, he's like, and he doesn't have to be exaggeratedly awful. You know, it doesn't have to be like a characteristic horror film jerk who we're going to kill in the first 20 minutes. It can just be the guy who's like kind of a coward, kind, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't think that you'd necessarily have to do that much maneuvering. Like, you know, Salieri takes you back a little bit and every once in a while will interject some kind of commentary, but I think you could follow a couple of different perspectives. I mean,
the good guy who we'll call Mozart in this instance until we come up with his name.
We're going to with Mozart and Salieri. And the priest.
And the priest. Okay, I do kind of dig all this. Are we still doing the
sea serpent?
The basilisk. the Lisk and its Basil. I don't know. I like that. I like all of that. Can we do... I feel like we can still do pirate treasure. It is like this belief. It's like it's haunted. This like, this is a haunted treasure and the actual thing. Because like, ooh, people have gone after this treasure before. And they've disappeared mysteriously. Ooh. And then it's like, no, holy crap, there is a giant monster down there.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we can have... I mean, it could still be pirate treasure, and it could still be specifically gold that's down there with a whole pirate feel to it. But we can't have a basilisk and ghosts.
No, we don't need ghosts. I don't want ghosts.
Harry Potter did it.
Oh, shit, they did. I think for this to work, we could insinuate that there is some sort of pirate curse. And that adds a lot to the mysticism, which is very scary. There's just a whole mystery of we don't know what's down there.
Yeah, I think that's what Alec is saying. That there's not necessarily, like, actually ghosts, but that's just how we've explained these disappearances. Or, like, like it's a joke among the people, you know, going after it. It's like, oh yeah, watch out for the pirate curse.
Yeah,
word. Okay, so I'm thinking the reveal that it's not... you know, something that's necessarily unexplainably supernatural, but definitely something big. There is the reveal, it's not a giant snake.
Yeah, it's not supernatural, it's unnatural.
Yes, is the midpoint where we go down and you don't see it, but you do see something like slither. Ugh, I hate this. You see a like someone in the crew, like big shadow moves, and they're like, Nani? They look up and like they're like, where'd the sun go? And then it's, and it could be a tentacle, but the idea is there's like something that only the way it moves, you know, it's something alive and it's massive, and you're like, well, we're stuck here with that. Okay, so
period,
that is sort of the midpoint, and stuff has to like shit has to hit that fan at the midpoint. So we've got where we're going. We've got the framing device. How do we start? I think we've sort of streamlined the process of starting. The narration gives you a lot of exposition right away. We just say who these characters are. And what is the scene that is them interacting with each other so that we can get the vibe right from the get-go of who these people are? Like, one of them is a party guy. One of them is... nerd alert, glasses, she wears glasses, she's a nerd. One of them is, you know, just there for demolitions. He's the big guy who loves explosions, you know.
He's turning into Atlantis.
Oh,
I think my first idea was gonna be, it's like they're looking for Atlantis, the basilisk killed everyone at Atlantis, which now we've changed enough ideas.
Yeah.
But also, it's just, I don't know.
Is it that much of a change to say that we're looking for Atlantis instead of we're looking for a treasure?
Sure, like, we're looking for Atlantis, the basilisk destroyed Atlantis.
And we find Atlantis, and everyone's dead and eaten.
Of course everyone's dead and eaten. It's Atlantis. It's been gone for a while.
Oh, man. Okay. Now, I do have to know, before we get any further, this... not essentially protagonist, but our narrator.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to make the statement that there is something wrong with what they did.
Mm-hmm.
How, like, the priest comes through and he's like, nope, everything works out if you're good. And then he isn't like a, I got away with it. Like, he is damaged after the fact.
Yeah.
Like the psychological experiments when people learn things about themselves.
Yeah. Okay.
He's
and
not
that's
like,
what I'm saying. I think that's why... the Harry Styles character works so great in Dunkirk is because it's actually an examination of, like, what do you do when you are, like, pretty sure you're about to die? That's pretty horrible knowledge to have about yourself.
Yep.
And then if you survive, you have survivor's guilt.
Yes.
And you wouldn't have survived if you hadn't been like that.
That's true. The true horror.
I mean, so we just... So, Eric, in the beginning... so we've got, like, this guy, and he lives in his Oceanside home, because he never wants to be too far away from
Ooh,
the
aesthetic.
Reminder that his... from he doesn't feel like he can be too far away from the reminder of his sins.
Okay.
He's being interviewed by like a priest or like a journalist or whatever is trying to like, find out.
Someone
like, 10-year anniversary to... the 20-year anniversary of your book when you wrote about these crazy experiences and what happened.
I don't think it should be too far after. I think it should be the experience is fresh.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's like someone wants to get him to the Nobel Prize Awards because he found literally Atlantis, you know, and he doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't want to think about it, and he definitely doesn't want a trophy for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then that, I mean, that makes the reveal. So that makes the identity reveal.
This
harder.
Is way better.
Yeah, okay, this is way better. Then we'll go with that.
I mean, just then our original, like, pirate.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
We got from pirate ghosts to Amadeus. Yeah. This is sick.
Yeah.
It's also got a little flavor of True Detective.
A little bit. Everything. I mean, we always aspire to that sort of thing. It's just like, it's True Detective, except for, this just happened. Just, like, a minute ago. Like, this was last week.
I think it could be just a minute ago, but I don't think it has to be. Like, I think that this could be something that he, you know... finally, like, people have tried to get him to talk about it all through his life, and he's never talked about it, and he's finally meeting with this young aspirational journalist who like loves him and is like so impressed that he always turned down the Nobel and whatever. Like, yeah. That could work here as well. If that is the case, that could be determined by when you want to set it. Like, do we want it to be really, like, I don't know. Do we want to limit them in, like, the technology that they have access to? In which case, you could, like, make it a World War II movie. You know, I think that's a little... we could get cheesy, but, you know.
Yes. Anyway, I don't know.
I'm sorry, I realized this is Disney's live-action remake of Atlantis.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, we just, that's how we market it, and we're like, you want to see
what
Atlantis?
If you did? What if you told everyone it was Atlantis, and they're like, everyone's dead?
And it's rated R, and like, it's like, wait, like, oh my gosh, it's on streaming, so people manage to miss that it's rated R, they just click it and watch it with their kids, it's like, oh my god! Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. We have 5 minutes to come up with the first half of the movie. And I had an idea. Dang it, I forgot what it was.
Wait, why?
Oh, no, the idea was the... because we have to have a first half and a second half for recording the podcast.
Okay, so let me...
So we can have a commercial break.
Eric, is your idea at the beginning?
No, the idea was the Nobel Prize thing. Okay, great. I forgot I said it.
Okay, so... aspirational journalist comes to Salieri's home. It's the first time Salieri has done an interview in, like... decades.
I don't want it to be decades. I want it to be... How often are the Nobel Prizes?
Every year.
They're every year?
Yeah.
Then it should be, like, less than a year after it happened, you know?
Okay.
And, like, someone is... we'll just call them a journalist who... from whatever organization involved with the Nobel Prize.
So you're representative. It'd be a representative, like, coming to invite him to the ceremony, and he's like, oh, goodness should be a reward, and that's a very good idea, because, like, if it's from that committee, or, like, somebody who gives those awards, they would be very much like, it's like, goodness should be rewarded, and goodness will make the world all right, goodness will make things all right, and you show that, despite everything that you've been through, and then he's like, no, let me tell you my tale, and then it fades back, and then we have, like, we have that Goodfellas scene, and it's like, and there was Jimmy two times, but with a bomb.
Yeah.
I'm going to blow this up.
And we're going to skip the commercial break. It works better if we don't do it this time.
So you like it better with it being fresh. This is his immediate response to having survived, as opposed to he's lived with the knowledge that he only survived from this for so long.
Because, I did say that, just making an assumption that I didn't tell y'all. I was assuming he doesn't reveal what he did to survive to the interviewer.
Oh.
But if this is more like Amadeus, and it is like a decade after or something, then it would make sense this is the first time he's taken an interview in so long because he wants to make
I think because we were talking Amadeus, I was assuming it was because he's lived with this so long and now his demons have tortured him so much and he's about to die and he feels like he can't die without... you know, revealing something that happened to him.
I feel like because we want to keep with, like, the helplessness, I think it should be, like, looking to the future.
Okay.
It's like, I'm going to live with this forever. I can never tell anyone.
So is he taking the Nobel Prize?
No, I don't think he takes it. But I don't think I don't think he owns up to what happened.
Either. I think it should be forced upon him. If that's the take that we're going, he has to, like, okay, so we have to also preserve his identity, right? And the good guy would initially try to reject it, right? Like, if mm-hmm. he is good, he's going to, like, be so troubled by the memory of all his dead friends that he would never accept this award.
Right.
So we do have to, I think, you know, he can't be all bad guy. He's got to, like, really wrestle with this.
Yeah.
I feel like
almost, because if he's all bad, then that's sort of boring.
I feel like he should be very sweet. He should be very friendly, and he finds that that's because it's convenient.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Okay, yeah, and as he's in these worse and worse situations, he becomes more and more concerned only with his own survival.
Well, rather than a sort of escalation revealing more that he's not a great guy, I do think instead it should be. He's a really big problem. He's like almost a leader, and he's like, you saw some scary shit, don't be afraid, let's push on, let's keep going. And then when it comes time, when it's someone is like, I saw a giant fucking demon, he's like, no, I understand, but I'm with you, we're all in this together. And then when we see it for the first time, he sees it for the first time, he fucking loses it, and that's when you know, instinct kicks in, and that's also what the sort of climax finale of him getting everybody else killed.
We have one major problem.
Uh-oh.
Which is that he would look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought we'd abandoned that already.
I sort of worked under the assumption, if we're not doing, like, a decade or two, or a long time later, then we're only doing, like, a year later, and then it would be... We don't have a case of mistaken identity as an audience. It's just the protagonist seems like a great guy until he's confronted with, you know, a giant sea serpent.
Yeah.
In which case, it's like, oh, he's the only... You know, you're drawing on all the horror tropes you've seen in the past. You see him, you're like, oh, he's the only survivor because he's, you know, Catholic or something. Which is the statement that a lot of people made. But anyway... You know what I mean.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So you make that assumption, and then we sort of... It's Amadeus.
You think he's going to be rewarded with survival because he is in some way moral or willing to, you know, forego the treasure or whatever.
Right.
But really, he gets to survival by... sacrificing others.
Yes, like when it when other people have a close brush with the monster and maybe they even see it, and then when they get back to some place that is somewhat safe, he's the one who is like idealistic. So it's a movie, so you're assuming that whatever ideals the characters have, that's what they follow no matter what. But only after he's put under that pressure do you see,
I just don't find this quite as well. I think that works if we get rid of the looking back lens, because I think that it, with that, if we're looking at this and we know he survives, then you really only get one moment of satisfying shock of him not rising to the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to if it's somebody looking back and we know that one person survives this story and we want to assume it's the person who's consistently being brave and inspirational and trying to get everyone out of here, but it's really the guy who we're seeing consistently. Like, maybe we have a similar kind of arc where he starts off trying to be brave. He's sort of like the secondary, like, strong character, and then he quickly falls apart and we see him really, like, in a prolonged state of fear-induced, you know, crap. You know, just, like, general shittiness. I don't know. I think that I think there's more that you can explore about that, you know, what it took to survive and still maintain this idea that ultimately that guy, the guy who's doing what it takes to survive, is going to die anyway, and it's all going to be for nothing. And the brave guy is going to survive because he was brave. And then that's not what happens. And so I think that there's something to be said about that level of walking alongside the characters who are in this, instead of having one moment where he was brave, 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 good, 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 in denial, in denial, in denial, and then he has one encounter with the scary thing and then makes one decision. And, like, we can do that.
Yeah. I mean, we can sort of force more situations, because the reason movies are cool is because when a situation dictates the protagonist or the character you're following to make a choice, that's why you watch. So we could make it so that there are other things that are, you know, dangerous, but not necessarily horrifying, because this guy, maybe he has thalassophobia and he doesn't know it. But they're definitely dangerous and mortally risky. He does perform just, you know, oh, those rocks are falling, I have to tackle those people out from under those rocks. And he does it. Everyone else is freaking out and everybody else is like, about, like, at each other's throats, and he's the one who's like, hey, no, shut up, you know? He deals with the natural disaster kind of thing. He deals with the social groupthink kind of problem. But then when the final thing comes and he's sort of established the kind of decisions he makes the opposite one in the end, that third one. I dig that. What do you think?
I find that unsatisfying for some reason.
Me too. I think that that's sort of preserving the shock without the earned revelation or something.
Yeah, I feel like I totally understand the idea of, is like, there are things in the world that he understands, there are risks he can take that he understands, and then we're confronted with this, like, unknowable entity of, like, this, the monster, and he can't handle shit anymore. But I feel like that needs to be either communicated earlier in the movie and, like, sort of represented earlier. And we, like, need to move towards it more quickly.
And I think that's a different kind of horror film of, yeah, like, testing your mettle, you know, like, the weak fall away faster. Whereas this guy, you think he's strong enough to sustain everything that, you know, it's like, you know, it's the tests of Hercules, I guess, or something. Like, he can totally handle with ease some of these scary things, but then he confronts his, you know, his limitation of where his courage falters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like I got lost at some point. I feel like this is a different setup. I missed a cue.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure when we moved from, there's a definite, like, kind of brave, heroic figure that we think is going to survive till the end. And then there's a guy who we're pretty sure is going to get picked off pretty early.
We can do that instead.
Well, I'm not saying instead. I just, like, I was operating with the wrong vision for a while now.
No, yeah, I just pitched that brave guy encounters something unfamiliar and then turns out to, you know, have to confront this new ideology just because I found something foreign. I am not as good as I thought I was. But that was just a one-off idea sort of pitch I had, and I should have pitched it earlier because I constructed a little bit around it. But it works a lot better if what you said. It works a lot better if...
I've just had this stupid image of Harry Styles in the back of my head for too long, and I might need to let him go.
Well, I kind of dig, you know, he's older, he looks different, he's like one of the two Chinese guys who was on the expedition, and the one, the duality of man. There's the one, and we flash back to the past, and he's like, oh yes, I shall now tell you how it went down.
And then it dissolves to a guy.
And it dissolves to a guy, and you, the audience, you're like, ah, yes, the same man in the past.
Because we're deceiving you.
Because we're silly little dum-dums.
Yes. And, right. And we dissolve, and then, like, at the end of the movie, when he's, like, huddled in a lifeboat being saved, we dissolve to his face in the right. present. Yes. And it's like, ha-ha, it was him all along.
Major note. And I don't want to force that. Like, that's just what I thought. That's the direction I thought we were going. And so if that's not the direction we're going, I need to backtrack and figure out where I...
Well, no, that's what we're doing now.
Okay. We're doing that now. We played around and we went in little circles with a series of other things, but we're doing that now.
Yes. I'm the boss.
He's old. I'm
the captain now.
Exactly. I don't know. Okay. I love that... I get that that's part of the process, but sometimes I hate when we do that. It's like, let's wander around in pointless little circles for 20 minutes
and an hour, go back. An hour and 20 minutes.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. That's, to be fair, just, we wandered around in a big pointless circle at the beginning.
We're not uploading an episode this week.
Oh, no.
Unless anyway.
You'll edit it?
I'll help edit it.
Oh, no.
We can just try again tomorrow.
I don't have any time. Okay. Now we've got to come up with every single plot point.
Okay.
Except, yeah. Okay. Except the, well, no, yeah. Now we have to come up with every single plot point. So, we get the very first scene, which is just some interviewer, journalist type of guy coming through, who's a big fan of the expedition. And so... he maybe speaks over the phone to his boss, her boss, because it should be that easy to integrate diversity. She's on the phone with her boss, and her boss is like, I know you're a big fan, but please try to, like, get all the information you need out of this. Don't just gush over the awesome expedition that happened. And she's like, they literally found Atlantis. Of course I'm going to freak out. And then she goes in, and then... a priest walks out and all he gives her is take it easy on him, and then he leaves, and then she is like, uh-oh, maybe this isn't gonna be fun, and she sits down and he's chilling there just looking at the water, and then she's like, so I'm here for the, you know, 10th anniversary of what happened out there, and he's like, yeah, you're going to be the first person. And then he, like, thinks about it. And he's like, the second person to hear the truth from me. Because he's like, yeah. He suspects he's dying. That's why he's coming out with all this. Very first scene of flashbacks, which is going to be the bulk of the movie. So I'm going to call it the past and the future, I guess. So
can we zero in on whatever prize he got as part of this, like, you know, establishing shot?
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at... and it's just sort of like, meh. Yeah. Over in the corner, you know, like,
yes.
He hates this thing.
Exactly. And then we get the first scene of flashback, which is...
ooh, or the priest looks at it as he's leaving, and he's like...
and he's like, ooh.
Be easy on him.
Ooh. So, first scene of flashbacks, we get introduced to the whole cast, which is however many our head writer says we need. Which is probably about, like, five... for the 5-man band, maybe 6 and 7. How many did Atlantis have? How many were in Atlantis?
The
Disney
animated Spunky one. Girl, Athletic Girl, Little Demolition Mole Man. No, he
was Demolition Mustache Man.
Demolition Mustache Man.
That's Digging four. Mole Man.
Sweets, was that his name?
Sweets was the doctor.
Sweets.
Yeah.
We've got the leader who turned out to be the bad guy, and we have Miles.
Seven.
Seven.
At least.
It's usually 5 or 7. Yeah. So 7 works better
Magnificent
for a
7.
Horror movie. Yeah.
It's a large cast. Never
so, and we can
and
just...
and diverse.
And we can just stick... not stereotypes. What's the word? No,
cliches.
Tropes?
Tropes. We can just sort of stick tropes on people as we go.
And I think that part of it will be, right, like... we're kind of messing with the tropes a little bit. And like in that, the kind of weaselly, again, not crazy horrible, but just one of those sort of nothing characters that you expect to be one of the first to go.
Yeah.
He keeps surviving.
And so we've got the leader type, and maybe the leader isn't the other guy who is the same age range and race as our narrator, so that whoever has like the map or the inscription or whatever that has given our crew the clue of where to look for Atlantis, that is the other sort of doppelganger that we are assuming is our narrator and is, for all intents and purposes, the protagonist of this story, who just dies.
Yeah. I also just thought, I think that if, especially if there's some sort of like, you know, we're including a diverse cast, and so any difference in race would be a giveaway, kind of. So we have to make them the same. I think that they should be friends. I think that they should be best friends or brothers or something that would, in a traditional horror film, be like fodder for the main character. You know, like the protagonist's best friend, brother, whatever, gets killed. As a way to kind of make you more sympathetic for the protagonist. And so that's what you're maybe going into this expecting, that his weaker, younger, you know, person who he protects is the person who we expect to die pretty quickly. But really what winds up happening is that weaker, younger person he protects winds up letting him, like, you know, bumping him off.
Holy crap. The exact same thing happened in We Happy Few, which was a video game that had a really cool story, but was boring as batshit, so nobody played it. So we have that character, we have all of them, and then what is, I guess, the sort of what you would call the inciting incident is them going under, the sort of
the whirlpool,
plunging down, and the sort of going away from what we think is safe. Maybe we had to like skim across the top of the ocean until we got to a certain coordinate, and now we're going straight down. So that first scene of introductions is on the surface, and then we plunge down, and that is, it's getting darker and darker, and then we turn on the lights of our giant submarine, because it has to be pretty big to allow for, I don't know why I made that decision just now, but, you know, we turn on the lights, so we feel, we are in a foreign place, it is dangerous, it is scary, but we have our kind of safe space. And we get to our first sort of pinch point. I'm going to go with more broad strokes. I'm not going to like copy and paste plot points right here. We get to Atlantis, or rather we get to the outer wall of what we need to get past to reach Atlantis. And then is sort of the awakening of Atlantis's guardian, which is a giant snake. Yeah, which we, like the inscription says...
I would say destroyer.
I'm going for...
I think we got mermaid skeletons all over the place.
I'm going for Disney's it's Atlantis. Smog. There was a giant robot defender. Oh, so maybe there's an inscription there.
And maybe we do that. Maybe there's like a fake one. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
oh, that would be cool. Be a horror movie anymore. It was what I just thought of. Never mind.
But there might be a red herring monster, you know? Like...
Yeah. It can't be quite a crossing of a threshold. Well, it could just be like a really long inciting incident. We take the plunge, and then we, in just a scene or two, come across our first sort of crossing the threshold. Because we, you know, taking a plunge down is a kind of crossing the threshold, but what is the plot point that is known as crossing the threshold would be finding the wall or the gate into Atlantis or whatever. So we cross into that, and that somehow has a direct correlation with waking up the sea serpent? Or, like, now the sea serpent knows there's something living in in his domain again? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess we just won't explain that because we have no time. And on to the midpoint.
I think
that
I think some of those monsters are considered to be eternal, you know, and, like, you know, sustain themselves off of whatever's around. And now there are people around, so mm-hmm. Cool.
Like, no, well, all right, cool. These things were delicious last time.
And so we have to now start moving towards the midpoint. What is, I guess the midpoint could just be finding Atlantis. Like, we're here. Yeah. Awesome. Now, how do we get out? Atlantis could be a maze. It could be a giant labyrinth. Holy, that's oh, terrifying. Man.
That is so scary.
An underwater giant maze with monster? A sea serpent with
a snake in it.
Holy, that's terrifying. I love that. And so we found our way in. And like,
and you could also, again, maybe the red herring is like booby traps or something. Like, you think it's going to be kind of ghosty. You think it's going to be like, God, oh, the maze is what's scary. But like,
yeah, like people... And what I'm kind of imagining is...
And maybe it is scary. Maybe a couple people die in the maze.
Like, yeah. I think that's really good for, like, we have our tiny-ass submarine, and then mm-hmm. we go, and now we're like, okay, get on the scuba suits, go walk the ocean floor and navigate this maze and come back. And
this like, is so exciting.
And one person just doesn't come back. And then, like, the midpoint yeah. is there's something out there, or rather, in here with us. We're lost in this... it doesn't have to be an outright literal maze. It's like the city is impossible to navigate because there's like a ceiling. And we figure out there's a hole in the ceiling or something like that. What we thought was the ocean floor is the ceiling to what is the what we call Atlantis, the city we're in. So that what I'm getting at is there's a hole somewhere, and that's how the only survivor narrator gets out.
Right.
So the midpoint is someone didn't come back. But look, they gathered, like, an echolocation seismic data map. There's a hole here. We just have to get there. And then the sort of after the midpoint, before the first pinch point, is them sort of making their way there. That pinch point before the finale is, like, oh, look, is that wall moving? Is the maze moving? It's like, no, it's a giant-ass snake. That's not a wall of the maze. Part of what we thought was the maze is the serpent.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And that's our first glimpse of, oh, whatever we're fighting is a giant fucking snake.
And it's Jormungandr. It's the snake that eats the world.
Yeah. Holy crap.
And I think that you have a little bit of, I don't know, you can hint at it, right? Like, you're going to be like, that wall wasn't there. Or, yeah. like, there was a wall here.
That's why the seismic map is worthless.
Yeah.
So we're just, you know, as long as we know we're moving in the general direction, we're making progress. We just don't know how much. Stakes. The pinch point is we're down to, you know, the bare bones of the crew. What was the 7-man band becomes the 5-man band, becomes like the trio, I guess. And... I guess what I'm saying is, now that there are only 2 or 3 people left, 2 Chinese bros and an optional white guy, or somebody else, I don't know.
That is a lady.
Yeah, I know, I'm just going to say, we have one NPC women, and 2 Chinese guys.
Women can get eaten by sea monsters too.
Yeah!
It's about time.
What is it that our protagonist... does
yeah
to either leave behind or outright murk the other two. What I'm getting at is what I'm working with right now in my head is doppelganger air quotes protagonist is like, let's go guys, and then they're trudging towards the geyser that's going to push us three up and towards the hole so we can swim out with our, you know, plot device pocket-sized lifeboat or whatever. And then they're all trudging. NPC third person stumbles, falls, gets stuck. The snake is coming, and it's like you see its silhouette getting closer and closer the whole time. And you know, sleazy guy who we don't think is a protagonist is like, no, come on, there's no time to leave her. And right. then good guy is like, no, there, we can all get out of here if both of us help. Yeah. And then he goes up and he's gone, and that's when you see the snake in like full light. Is like, he's like, I don't know, man, maybe we should. He looks up and it's there,
and then he goes I'm gone.
Yes. Yep. And then we come back to the
and
present.
I do think that that kind of tracks with what you were saying of, like, there's a moment where he, like, that is the thing that ultimately gets him out, you know, like, or is, he's been sort of weaselly this whole time. He's been, you know, kind of a wimp and wouldn't have made it this far without, you know, his brave friend. And he wants to be brave, but it's just hard and blah, blah, blah. And then he's about to maybe try to help. And he looks into the face of this monster and he sends up his parachute. And he's like, no.
Exactly. There we go. And back to the present. And I'm thinking there's just a really, really hard-hitting conversation between this reporter who is like starry-eyed, I'm going to meet my hero. Who, now that this has all happened, we realize, oh, wait, the weasel made it out. And then she's just, you know, essentially mortified. And then he gets wheeled out, because I imagine him in a wheelchair, just like Soliari. And then he's, like, just, like, gestures vaguely at the... Like, he's not like, what you gonna do with that bitch? He's like, you know, he's messed up. He's broken. And then he's, like, getting wheeled out of his room, and he just gestures at the prize. And he's like, you can have that, by the way. Something like that. Then we're left with just her alone in a room, because, you know, she's us. How do we deal with that?
I think, how do we, like, she's us, how do we deal with that? She writes the story where he's heroic or justified.
I dig that a lot.
I haven't said anything in a while.
I dig that a lot, but I think maybe it could be left ambiguous. I don't know why I like that, so I can't argue for that right now. What do you think, if it's left ambiguous, where he is, like, wheeled out and he's like, write your story however you want
to. I'd like to state clearly that I think it should just end in that room. But anyway.
Yeah, I definitely think it should end in that room. And maybe if it's ambiguous, I do think that she should be struggling with, you know, this fall of her hero. I think she should be like, but you didn't have a choice. You know, you couldn't have saved them or something like that. And he's like, okay.
How do you know that? You were there.
You know, like, I think there should be some kind of... I think that, you know, as we're trying to subvert some of these expectations, whatever. And, like, maybe she's not starry-eyed. Maybe she's trying to turn his life into a movie. You know, like, maybe she wants to write a movie about this.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And the, you know, like, you're such, you know, what you went through was so horrible. And I'm so sorry that this happened to you. But, like, I feel like your story needs to be told. And blah, 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 blah. And she, but then that, you know, in the same way you're disappointed by who he is at his root, or like what this says about like what we think about justice and survival, she's like, oh.
Yeah. I think what...
Anyway, maybe that's not the route we go, but I do think that there should be some, you know, she's sort of the proxy for the audience a little bit, and so there should be some kind of element of, No. That's not how this was supposed to go. And even if it's just a minor, like... But there's nothing you could do, you know.
Yeah.
I dig it. Whatever the ending, I really dig it. And now I'm going to retroactively change something, which is we shouldn't do on this podcast. But she, like, comes in and she sees the award. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's the thing. And he's like, do you want it? And then she's just automatically like, of course I want it. But that's your, that's the monument. And he's like, you can have it. And she's like, oh my gosh, well, we can talk about that later. Let's do the interview. And then while he's getting wheeled out, you can still have that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This poor guy. This poor girl. This is so cool.
It's not really very horror-y.
No, but it's fucking scary.
Yeah.
It's fucking scary, and then it's the worst kind
and
of horror.
Existentially horrifying.
Exactly. All right. I think the idea...
The real horror was the friends we lost along the way.
Oh my gosh. I think
that was good.
That
was good.
I think the potential of this story idea has been tapped.
Like a tree with the sap taken out of it to make a delicious story syrup.
I only ever saw that in cartoons.
Apparently it really works.
Huh?
It's water. You can, yeah, you get water. Cool. If you drill hard enough, far enough in. The end?
The end.
The end.
Thanks for listening to this episode of StoryTap. If you enjoyed, make sure to leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter @StoryTapPodcast. It helps a ton. And thanks again.